Billy Edward Albert Meyer was born in Switzerland February 3rd, 1937. Makes him 70 years old now. For over 56 years, he has maintained a series of physical and telepathic contacts with extraterrestrial beings who he claims come from the Plejaris star cluster. Acting as a mediator and a spokesperson, he imparts fascinating teachings and wisdom to all of us. And he guides us and talks about Earth back to the path that we have left so long ago. This is an amazing story. Now, with Billy Meyer, it either is one of the biggest UFO hoaxes ever concocted, or it's perhaps the greatest UFO case and series of cases I've ever heard. In a moment, his American media representative, Michael Horn, joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Michael Horn has researched the Billy Meyer UFO contacts for 26 years plus. He's now the authorized American media representative for the Meyer case. Michael challenged the top international professional skeptics to duplicate Meyer's photographic evidence. Their complete failure to do so culminated in their public refusal to submit their photos for scientific testing. Even more importantly, the specific prophetically accurate information spans 50 plus years that Meyer has published continues to be confirmed by some of these events that unfold. For his trouble, there have been 19 documented assassination attempts on his life. Michael is convinced that the Meyer case is the most important story in all of humankind. He is our guest on Coast to Coast. Michael, welcome back. How are you?
George, thank you very much for having me on. I'm very happy to be back on your show.
We're going to talk a little bit about Billy Meyer for new people who just don't know who he is. And, you know, my question at the top and my overall thoughts was this either is a great hoax that he has concocted or it is perhaps the best series of stories ever in the most realistic.
I have to agree with you, and, you know, I'd like to say a little more about that, but there has been I just want to put this in so I don't forget for later. There's been a little bit of new information that I want to get to later in the show.
Sure.
And I also want to say that on my website that I know you've linked to, there's some information about fixing the peace symbol, and I just want to encourage people to read that. This ties into the new information, and it's probably not expected in the context of the Meyer case. We're talking UFOs and stuff, but it's a very interesting thing about fixing the peace symbol. But let me get back to responding about this, you know, unusual case. Actually, it's been about 28 years now that I've been researching it, and there have been 21 attempts in Meyer's life to date. So since you and I spoke last, a couple other things transpired.
Yeah.
But the first thing that comes to mind for me, apart from the fact that I hope that all the skeptics out there that heard the introduction will take their high, you know, blood pressure medication, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show, because they're not fond of me saying these types of things, you know, about having defeated all the skeptical challenges. But we'll get to that in a second. Let me just say this. The Meyer case, what makes it so remarkable in many ways is the quality as well as the quantity of the physical evidence, which is still irreproducible, and we will establish that hopefully before the night is over. And there's a variety of, there's actually six different categories of still irreproducible physical evidence, and that's quite remarkable. But there's also 24,000 plus pages of information, including prophetic information. And of course, another incredibly important factor in the longevity of the Meyer case it's been the frustration, the envy, and the anger of all the skeptics who've done so much to keep the controversy alive, exactly as Meyer had been told would happen, and he was told this more than 30, 40 years ago.
Okay, well, here he is. He's 70 years old now. Tell us a little bit about Billy Meyer, Michael.
Billy Meyer is a fascinating person who, if you meet him in person, isn't fascinating. And it's kind of remarkable and refreshing at the same time. And what I mean about by that is this: if you meet people that are connected with important phenomena, whether it's genuine phenomenon or if it's not, you meet a leader, a so-called guru, a so-called contactee, generally you're going to get a lot of personality and, you know, auric excitement going on. Meyer is a very direct, simple, and I don't mean simple-minded, but simple man. He speaks clearly, simply. He does not project, I'm special. He doesn't hide his light under a bushel either. He's just the guy. And if you meet him and you don't know who he is in this whole scenario of UFOs and alleged extraterrestrials, you don't know that he's anybody in particular. You really wouldn't. And I think that's part of the beauty of the whole thing, especially when you take into consideration this life that this man has had, the ups and downs, the dramas, the remarkable, you know, claimed and alleged experiences and information. They exceed anything that I know of, experienced or even claimed to have been experienced by any other person in history.
He is, he looks like the older version of our friend Billy Gibbons, who's with ZZ Top, doesn't he?
I guess so. I hadn't thought of that one. You know, people say that they think, you know, why does he have a beard? At one point, Billy answers somebody, he says, well, you know, I have one hand, and it's actually easier for me to not try to shave, so I let it grow. And, you know, also some people, and I think Meyer and people there included, think that sometimes it enhances your sensitivity to have a beard. And that's true for men, too. And I think that some of the people there have no use for beards or long hair, just like anybody anywhere else. So he maybe looks like ZZ Top guy to you. And now you're going to have me having to not think about the pink elephant that you've just brought up.
Maybe I'll have Lex put up a picture of Billy and Billy Myers and Billy Gibbons, and we'll compare the two. Lex, get to work on it. See if you can do this while we're on the air. This original contact with Billy Meyer, why him, Michael? What happened?
Well, okay. Here's to set that up. Here's the story, and I use the word allegedly in a lot of places, and for this reason. There's things in this case that I claim that I and or other people have proven or can prove to be so beyond a reasonable doubt that anybody can actually prove that the case is genuine and all that. Okay, if that is the case, and if there are these extraterrestrials, as you put it, why him? Allegedly, according to these alleged ETs, and I won't do that for the whole night, but that's just for all the skeptics that are going to, you know, come hammering me with emails and maybe phone calls. Reincarnation is a fact of life. It's almost like we're going to jump to the payoff on this whole thing, but I'll hold back a little bit. What they've said is this: the human spirit is the immortal part of each human being. Each human being anywhere in the universe, and they claim that there's literally millions and millions of races of humans of all sorts in the universe, and that each human being is imbued with a spirit, an eternal, immortal part of the creation. And the creation is the term that Meyer has brought down, he claims, from these people, that represents this universe. Now, for a religious person who uses the term God, the creation would be all of that and more by a exponential factor. Ostensibly, the creation gives a hologram of itself, in essence, to each human life form, and that's the spirit. The soul is a temporary or temporal construct that each human generates and composes during a lifetime, and its primary residence is around the solar plexus, we're told. Now, in answering the question, the human spirit incarnating or reincarnating, according to them, millions and millions and millions of times, countless millions of times, in the course of evolution, but not exactly Darwinian evolution, in the course of evolution for the purpose of evolving back into the creation, eventually in trillions of years. The spirit that allegedly inhabits this simple, quote-unquote, simple one-armed farmer slash ex-rock and roller, Billy Meyer, you know, now I say that's that pink elephant. This spirit is said to be enormously ancient, and that it has it has performed this function before on our world and maybe others.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm also fascinated by the names of the extraterrestrials who have been in contact with him since he was five.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got what, Safath, is it?
Safath, S-F-A-T-H. Meyer claims that that was the first extraterrestrial person that he had contact with, and that indeed that this extraterrestrial Safath had prepared the parish priest, Father Zimmerman, to be a counsel for young Edward Albert Meyer at this point, a five-year-old boy growing up in a conservative, I guess, Protestant village in Switzerland in 1942. The last thing you're going to expect is that a parish priest, let alone a five-year-old boy there, is going to be in touch with extraterrestrials. But this is how this case unfolded. And I have to say, having just been in Switzerland recently in September, working on a new film that I'll tell you about and your audience, the documentation that Meyer has on everything in this case so exceeds anything you can imagine. The paperwork that this man has kept throughout his entire life, every visa, every certificate, everything, it's a remarkable documentation, and we will have it in our documentary.
Yeah, he keeps good records.
He keeps good records, right. Yes, and he shoots back when people shoot at him, too.
So. I want you to tell me a little bit later on about these 21 assassination attempts on him and who you think may be trying to do him in. Asket was his second contact. What do we know about that extraterrestrial?
What we're told is that Asket, it turns out, we're also told, is a niece of Ptah. We'll get to this genealogy and thing in a moment. But Asket is ostensibly a woman who comes from a parallel to our universe, a physical universe, that is called the Dal, D-A-L universe, and that she, her people, the Timars, are a people that work in concert with the Playaran people, and that her mission was to take over from Svath after the 11 years of the contacts that Meyer had with Svath after he died, and to continue the tutoring and working with him directly and taking him on different types of trips and things like that that are quite amazing to read about. And there's all sorts of controversies, of course, about this stuff, as you can imagine. But she's said to have been that person, and that he occasionally still has had some contact with her as of, I think, February of last year, if it was the last time, I believe, but I'm not sure.
And you said Soft died, huh?
Yes, apparently Meyer had described him when he was a little boy. He said it looked to him to be like a 90-year-old man in a kind of deep-sea diver's outfit without the helmet. And according to this, Meyer learned at the time that he was actually about 900 and some years old. The Playaran ostensibly lived to be anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 years of age. And Svath was, I think, also the father of Ptah, grandfather of Semyaze. You can't tell the players without a scorecard here. This stuff is interesting. It's not the most critical because, to be quite honest, this is right in the category of what I call the speculative, the other side of the I can prove it. No, I cannot prove any of this. And that's why I don't base the case on this, but I think it's very interesting information.
Well, and then on and on, like you said, Semyaze, the female Pleiadian, mm-hmm. and then Ptah, who was, the father. Went on and on. What is remarkable about this, Michael, happens to be the photographs that Billy has taken, then the films as well. Some of the clearest UFO pictures I've ever seen. I remember seeing them when I was younger, and I just couldn't get over it. I mean, I looked for ways, and this was way before the computer era.
Yes.
I was looking for ways to see, how did this guy do this? I couldn't do it. I couldn't find it.
Well, I'll tell you, if we get into speaking about the skeptical challenges, and I'll be happy to do it. And I'll also tell you some things that we haven't discussed very much publicly that further kind of ice the cake, no pun intended, because it's wedding cake UFO, but further ice the cake on the credibility and authenticity of the photos, the metal samples, and the sound recordings in the case. And there's so much information in this case about all of these things and more that it literally, if someone wants to debunk it, and I don't object to people being, skeptics or even debunkers if they are going to do their due diligence and not just have the agenda, to say, well, it's got to be a hoax because it's got to be. You go through all of the evidence and all of the enormous amount of material, resources, finances, and skills that one man would need to possess to pull this thing off, and you have to believe that. That's a far more preposterous thing to believe than that the man's simply a genuine contactee, and it bugs a bunch of people. So, we can speak about any and all of this, of course.
Is he still being visited, Michael?
Fairly regularly, yes. Again, this is the alleged statement because it falls into the speculative category. To the best of my knowledge, he is. There are contacts that are transcribed that we have in English a relatively small amount of information. But thanks to my friends in Australia, the Gaia Guys people, and thanks to my Australian webmaster, Woody Cornelius, we get this stuff put up onto the website as quickly as possible, and a link to the Gaia Guys in Australia, so what they get up before I can have it transferred over, you can get to. And of course, the FIGU website has the stuff in German put up all the time, and they also have all of these contacts in German, and they have volumes and volumes of things with so much more documentation on the accuracy of the prophetic information than I have, and I thought I had a lot. But when I go over there and I look at their books, they've got all these clippings from newspapers, volumes of it, where they show the old contact from Meyer, then they show the new, you know, article from the newspaper or the magazine or the scientific finding. And I read so much of the contact material between, well, starting in 1986, and then it was after that, when 2 years later, when I saw the first article that was supposedly a new discovery from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories about A-bomb testing in the ozone. And I said, gee, why doesn't that seem like a new discovery to me? And kind of reached under the bed and dusted off the Meyer contacts, and therein was that information that had been given to him in 1975. And here's the kicker. In those contact reports, he refers to the fact that he was first told about it in 1951. And indeed, later on, when we refer to some of these documents and things, people will see that. And he did have it in there. It's pretty mind-boggling. And it's for a reason. You know, we've been given this case and this information and this controversy for very specific reasons, and it's up to everybody to think it through. So I don't yell at people for not, quote-unquote, believing it. I just yell at them for, you know, being sloppy in their, you know, due diligence.
70 years old. How is his health?
You know, it's this last time I saw him, a few months ago, it was better than the time I saw him 6 months before. So he was not doing too well, and now he seems to be quite hearty last time I saw him. Considering his tasks and the work that he does and the stresses and strains that have been upon him and his family, I'd say he's doing pretty well.
Is he getting any special help or treatment, if you know what I mean?
Yes, well, you know what, I think it was like this. In the beginning, there was certain assistance, especially for protecting him against the assassination attempts. He was offered various types of assistance, and he accepted only a small amount of it when he was told that for him to be proud and to not accept help would actually jeopardize the work that he had to do, and it was as much a fault of his ego as if he had asked for more help, if you understand what I'm saying. It's kind of like people had said, well, if there really are these extraterrestrials, why didn't they give him another arm? Well, they did volunteer that. And he said, you know, that would create a lot of trouble for me because obviously I would suddenly be very special in terms of how did I have an arm reappear, and I would probably be kidnapped and abducted or whatever by parties who wanted that technology, and, you know, it just wouldn't be worth it. I've learned certain things from this experience that I wouldn't trade for anything else. He's really said that. And other times, like when he had a cracked rib or a certain type of an infection that he couldn't shake, they gave him help. But other than that, he goes to the doctor.
How did he lose that arm?
In 1965, he got into a bus in Turkey. He was traveling. His travels are kind of amazing. 42 countries, 150,000 miles on foot.
Well, just, that would have made him 28 years old then.
Yeah, he was traveling around actually starting before that. He had a very brief stint in the French Foreign Legion at around 15 or 16. That's another story. But when he was traveling around in Turkey, it was hot. Got next to the window seat, put his arm out the window with the narrow street. Yeah, it was that way. There was a bus barreling down. He was in the bus barreling down the street, and some drunken truck driver came by a little too close.
Oh,
yeah.
Mike, I couldn't think of a worse
thing. I know. It's pretty rough.
All right, stay with us. We're going to find out why the Billy Meyer UFO case just continues to survive. We'll talk about these assassination attempts on Billy Meyer. What do some of the skeptics say, and what are some of the predictions of the future? Michael Horn is our guest all night long tonight on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Tell you a little bit about this weekend. Art is going to have Saturday and Sunday night off, because he is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the group of Radio and Records, a talk radio convention here in Los Angeles. I've got the honor of introducing Art to the crowd before they give him this well-deserved award. But Saturday, Ian Punnett, of course, will do his program, Coast to Coast Live, with Ian Punnett from 6 to 10 o'clock Pacific time. And then Ian, of course, is going to stay on, and he'll do Coast to Coast for Arts Saturday night. Now, also, don't forget, before you go to bed at night on Saturday, turn your clocks up 1 hour. Daylight savings time. And then Sunday, I'll be filling in for Art, doing that program, and I plan to run his acceptance speech and part of that event where he gets that Lifetime Achievement Award. So I'll do that on Sunday, and then we'll be back to the program again on Monday right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with Michael Horn. Michael is the American media representative for Billy Meier. Now, how did that happen? How did you get that title, that position?
That's kind of funny. Well, I'll tell you, I started to research this case when I saw the photo book published by Lee and Britt Elders and Wendell Stevens, The Contact from the Pleiades book in 1979. There was not much I could do between then and 1986 except read that book and ponder. Then I got the contact reports in 1988, along with a fellow named Randy Winters, co-produced the Pleiadian Connection videotape, and I gave my first lecture on my own. I wanted to do lectures. I was inspired to do it, and kind of have off and on ever since been doing that. So in the year 2000, I went for the first time to Switzerland to meet Billy and other people there and kind of become an American passive member, meaning someone that considers himself a member of their overall group but lives remote from it. And it's a kind of lightweight membership, if you will, because I'm not living there with everybody that's involved in the day-to-day work. Then, a couple years after that, I said to them, look, I'd like to do this kind of officially for you, meaning I want the following. I want you to authorize me to represent you, your material, the way you want it represented, providing these other conditions are in here. And they would be that I am free to have my own opinion, to disagree, you know, because this is the way I am anyhow, and I have in the past. They've even written some disagreement into an article or two that I've had published where I didn't agree, and I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but I like the freedom of thought. And I said the last stipulation would be that you don't pay me anything and I don't pay you anything, so that we don't have that link of any, you know, kind of compromise. So basically, it's a voluntary position that I do gleefully, and they said fine. And we drew up a little contract for that purpose. And in the contract, Meier, one of the last things, I don't have it right now in front of me, but one of the last things was that the purpose of it, as far as they were concerned, ultimately was to promote the spiritual information in the case. Not religious, but spiritual. And I agreed with that, having a basic kind of introduction to that area at the time. And that's what I do. So I spend, I'd say, anywhere between 6 and 10 hours a day in one way, shape, or form or another, working on the case, research, correspondence, arguing with skeptics, doing lectures, radio shows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's that whole authorized American media representative.
Okay, well, tonight we're going to talk about some of Billy Meier's, the predictions, the things he's been told. We're going to talk about some of the photographs. We're going to talk about the wedding cake UFO photo.
Sure.
We'll get Michael Horn's reaction. We'll talk about some of the skeptics who are out there who just don't believe that the Billy Meier's case is real. And we'll get your views when you call in the last hour of the program with Michael Horn. This case has survived so long, it won't die down. Why is that, Michael?
Well, kind of like what we were saying earlier, George, is that there is so much evidence. It has not been debunked, and it's never been duplicated, it being all of these categories of evidence. The people that have come forward to support Meier, there have been over 120 witnesses who have seen these ships. There's 5 other photographers. Probably the most prominent witness who's vouched for Meier is a woman named Pobol Cheng. Pobol Cheng came forward in, I think, 1998 at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, and she made a presentation there. It was a very interesting thing that was videotaped by them, and the essence of it is this. She said that she was now a retired UN diplomat. She was married and living a quite nice, peaceful, quiet life, but people had been writing to her. They've been asking about this man, Billy Meier, because they're finding out about him, and they learned that he had spent time in the 1960s at something called the Ashoka Ashram, and they knew, her friends knew, that she had been there along with either a brother or sister because their grandfather was the head of that ashram. And she decided that she didn't feel that she could any longer stay quiet about this, and she had to come forward. And she said that she and her sibling, whoever it may have been, and I am forgetting whether it's a sister or brother at this point, were at this ashram in 1960s. And by the way, we have photographs on the website in my newsletter archive somewhere. People can see some of these photos. She said Meyer was studying there. He was studying Buddhism there. Everybody knew him and saw him, and everybody there saw the ships that would come and hover above the ashram. And not only that, most of the people saw the woman that would walk the grounds with Meyer and speak to him, and that she, this woman, Pobol Chang, as a young girl said that as a young girl, this woman, Asket, used to come into her room at night occasionally while she was falling asleep and just sit there and stroke her hair. And she said, you know, in the mornings I would wake up and I felt like I just knew a lot more about things, about people, than before you know, I'd fallen asleep. And she said, you know, after I'd left the ashram and was going to school and studying, I just distanced myself from anything to have to do with UFOs and this kind of controversy. I even told people that I didn't know anything about them. But I owe it to Billy Meyer to come and, you know, tell the truth, because he's an honest man. And we all saw this. And, she, you know, that was her statement. So in answering your question, why has the case survived? Because so much, when things emerge, they all serve to substantiate and support what this man has been saying, whether it's the prophecies, the witnesses, the other photographers, even the assassination attempts. It's just like the whole thing conspires to perpetuate this case and its controversy. And I don't think I can give you a better answer than that. If it was a hoax by now, believe me, all the skeptics that have tried to hack this to pieces, somebody would have succeeded. And I know that they claim that they have, but I'll be happy to tell you, you know, how they haven't.
Yeah, you've got the one big one, the Underground Video Group, that claims that everything's a hoax.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing's real. I mean, have they tried to contact you or confront you?
This is very funny, because that so-called lawsuit never happened. That whole thing with Underground Video was fomented by a guy named Cal Korf. He was the first major skeptic in this case who published a book when he was 17. It was a terrible book with a lot of defamatory stuff, but he couldn't be sued because he was underage. This is something a lot of people don't know, but Cal Korf recently imploded. Now all of the skeptics who were on his side are attacking him. He's attacking them. He had come out with this whole thing that he was going to sue me and Billy Meyer and stuff, and I engaged him for 3 hours on another radio show. He was unable to substantiate one claim. His website was virtually taken down. All of the claims and stuff he was put up there, so it's basically a shell of itself at this point. But to go further, it had the Underground Video turned into a company called UFO TV, and they now carry one of my discs on the Meyer case, and I know the president of it very well, and he kind of doesn't even want to think about those days because he kind of got suckered into that. And there is on my website, if people search for archived headlines and stuff, you'll be able to find all this stuff on the so-called Billy Meyer hoax. That whole thing itself was debunked, and the reason I'm not able to right now go to things myself is I'm at a secret location, meaning that it was a secret to me that I couldn't get the internet when I got here. So I just have some of my notes on my computer, but you'll find on the website, if you just look around and links and evidence and stuff, there's so many articles and things you can start to see how this whole hoax thing is the hoax. The Meyer case isn't the hoax. It was the hoaxers. And we've got people like, there's a fine fellow named David Biedney, who's a Photoshop expert, who came out claiming that he had, and I quote you, proved that Meyer had deliberately hoaxed an out-of-camera double exposure and blah, 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 blah. I turn out to be, according to him, a terrible liar. Meyer's a hoaxing, cunning liar who's a cult leader. You know, they have over 70 pages attacking me and Meyer. Now, the problem was that somebody that went on their own forum, who I think might have known something else about Photoshop, said, gee, David, I can't find what you're talking about in this thing. I'm using Photoshop. I don't see that line. So all of a sudden, that wasn't so solid. The next thing was that a guy that I know who's a skeptic, he doesn't want to look at UFO cases. He's been in the movie industry for 50-plus years, special effects guy. He said he looked at the photo in question, which I think you guys have on your website. It's the first of the two light ships, which is actually,
right.
And this guy said, no, that's not a double exposure. He says it's a triple exposure. It's more than likely accidental and in camera. And he said, you know, whoever's attacking this, and he says, I don't have a dog in this fight, but if a guy says that he can prove that that's a hoax, let him duplicate it. Well, David Biedney and his crowd wouldn't even try to duplicate it. They just attacked. You know, there's another photo on your site following it that was taken by Meyer shortly thereafter. There's no question, there's no double exposure or anything else. We found in this case that all claims that Meyer had an enlarger and a dark room and all this were absolutely proven to be false. The original investigators plus the author Gary Kinder had contacted the people at a studio called Bar Photo, and they were the people that handled virtually all of Meyer's photos and films in another little Swiss village, and they attested to the fact that Meyer bought all of his equipment from them, and there was no other camera shop around apparently at the time, and the only stuff he ever bought was film and cameras, and that he spent a lot of time holding cameras and trying to test cameras in the shop because of one hand. And they said it struck them that if he had been a man who had accomplices helping him, he wouldn't need to be fussy about how well he could manipulate a camera, that he would have people that could do this for him. But the kicker was, they said that they were rather startled when the photos and films came back because they were seeing things that they had never seen before. They would, you know, like in the old days in the shops when you'd get your photos back, how people would go through the photos and make sure everything was in order.
Right.
Well, they would go through them all, and they said, you know, there were no shots, because they were asked this by Gary Kinder. Well, did it look like there were any setups, like for models or any missed or muffed shots? And they said, no, these would come back like the negatives on a strip would come back. Each one was a clear photograph of this object in a slightly different position outside. There were no setups apparent. The films came back and blew their minds totally. They said, my goodness, you know, we've never seen anything like this. And then they got used to it after a while. They were asked, well, did he ever buy chemicals or an enlarger or any of the, they said, well, no, we would know. And that could easily be traced. And when Wendell Stevens and Lee and Britt Elders did their investigation, let alone then Gary Kinder, there was no trail of any of this.
Did he ever have other witnesses, Michael, out there?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he had a number of other witnesses. We spoke to some, and we recorded their testimony when we were in Switzerland in September. And, you know, a lot of the skeptics try to say, well, you know, his wife says it's all a hoax. We happen to have film from 1979. With his wife describing in detail not only her own sightings, with her children showing drawings of the things, but her talking about the other people along with her for the sightings. And we have some of these people now, many years later, that have given, you know, the testimony about these sightings. The continuity is remarkable in the case. And so you then get like a skeptic, like a fellow named Jeff Ritzman, who says that Meyer is using miniature trees and model UFOs and... you know, he's going to prove it, and he takes a bunch of little photos of a model, and then he threatens me with a lawsuit if I display the photos on my site or show them in comparison in presentations.
To the real ones.
Yes. And, of course, the thing is, and I learned this from the investigators and watching one of their films, and I'm not really savvy with technical stuff, but they said, and they actually showed it in the film that we're going to have reissued, when you are looking at and analyzing, they were doing digital analysis even 20-some years ago of the photographs, they said the contours in the Meyer craft, the number of pixels along the edges, the distinct foreground and the blurrier edges and distance, they could tell that these were large objects. They, and the skeptics didn't pay any attention to this next thing, Jeff Ritzman didn't, they had two models built. These were $400 models built at the MGM special effects lot. And they brought them to Switzerland, and the investigators photographed the model. They suspended it on a filament, just like everybody accused Meyer of doing it. And they and Meyer took photos of it. And then when they sent these in to Jim Dellatoso, they didn't tell him that they were model shots. They said they found these additional photos. Would he analyze them? And he was writing back to them saying, you know, these don't come out very well. This looks like a model to me. And they said, well, you know, we've been playing some games with you. Those are model shots. Now, the kicker for this fine fellow, Mr. Ritzman, was that he was accusing Meyer of setting up miniature trees. Now, when Jeff sent his photos went up for comparison, one of the telling things was his models were never next to any large trees. And we then found out accidentally that he's been cultivating miniature trees himself for 14 years.
Now, Myers, though, also, just because some people are confused,
yes,
he has admitted that he's had models of the crafts.
Yes.
But he claims they were toys for his children, right?
Well, or that's like that? Part of it. The other ones, and then I'll come back to ice the thing with the models and Jeff Ritzman. Not only did he admit that he had models, he and other people got together with the models and tried to do some photographs with people. This is reported. We have a book, the Preliminary Investigation Report by Wendell Stevens. I just looked at it tonight. I didn't bring it with me, but it's in there. And that we have that as an e-book as well. But people can read that. They show the photographs that Meyer took with other people trying to duplicate his quality of photos. This was no secret. And so the skeptics, because Meyer had thrown some of the burned photos in the garbage, somebody found it and said, aha, he's hoaxing it. So just to come back to this last point, because I think it's so important, when you are a miniature tree cultivator and you are a model maker and a photographer and a skeptic, and you claim that you can prove that this man, Mr. Meyer, has used all these things to hoax it, and you don't put one of your models next to a miniature tree to show how it's done, it tells me that you know in your heart of hearts that's not how he did it. And I'll give you the icing on that cake. Six forestry experts, and this is on the website too. You can find my article on this. I think it's Look Out for That Tree on the front page. Six forestry experts, and their names are there in the article, were sent photographs by James Dierdorf. James Dierdorf has done remarkable work in the Meyer case and on something called the Talmud Emanuel connected to the Meyer case. Well, anyhow, he sent photographs to six forestry experts. He said, tell me, are these potted plants? Are these miniature trees? The forestry experts, every one of them wrote back and said, those are full-grown, mature trees between, let's say, 30 and 45 feet of height. Here's the species. It's either an Abies alba or another variety. We can tell by the nesting, the crown of the tree here, the pruning marks, the growth of the tree, and whatever that object is, we don't know, but it's not a miniature object. That's a full-sized object. Six different forestry experts. So this case has been attacked and analyzed from so many different areas. You're not going to find that vulnerable spot here. You're only going to find more head-scratching material. Well, what the heck is this about? Six forestry experts are telling us those are real trees? By golly, I guess that's a real object. Now, the next question is, did Meyer make 21-foot diameter metal UFOs?
And well, if he did, they would have found them around his farm, huh?
To be sure. And if you ever are around the farm and you go, he's got some fantastic tools there, primarily for woodworking, gardening, and cutting trees and logs. It's a rural farm and house, and people live there, and there's a lot of labor that goes on all the time. And now they have computers and fancy stuff, but they ain't making no miniatures.
All right, stay with us, Michael Horn. We'll talk about some of the new information that you've got and also some of those predictions that they told Billy a long time ago. Speaking of Billy's, Billy Meyer and Billy T. Gibbons, their pictures are up next to each other on the coasttocoastam.com website. Billy T. Gibbons is the younger version of Billy Meyer, but go take a look. The picture is right underneath the photograph of the UFO. It says Billy versus Billy.